couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about Detective Pikachu, Palms, Tolkien, The Hustle, and a look back at The Hustle's inspiration, the original remake, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring the 70s classic Scream and Scream Again. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The big piece of news I want to hit is the Disney film theatrical slate through 2027. And the reason this is important is it's the first time they've given a full look at what they're going to be releasing and when after the 20th Century Fox merger. And the fact that it's not just Disney or Disney Animation or Pixar, but it's also got Marvel Studios and Lucasfilm. And then all the 20th Century stuff, including just the 20th Century Fox films, as well as Fox Searchlight. The stuff for like the rest of 2019, that's not a big surprise because it's already in the books. You know, I mean, Tolkien is coming out this week. I'm going to be talking about later in the show. Disney wasn't going to pull it and they went ahead and are releasing it anyways. It just happens to fall under their banner. It was completely developed and done and put in the pipeline long before Disney got this acquisition finalized. What's really interesting isn't looking at 2019 or even 2020. I think they moved the New Mutants a little bit, which has caused people some issues. Because there's a lot of people that are concerned that Disney is going to reduce some of the more R-rated content in the Fox brand. I don't think they will. I think that Disney is happy to have something that is not clearly a family films thing. I think that that's why they're going to keep 20th Century Fox, and they're going to lump all their R-rated stuff under that eventually. But they just have to shake out some of the properties, like the X-Men and the superhero stuff. The stuff that's really interesting is past 2020, because in December of next year, they're having West Side Story, which is directed by Steven Spielberg. That's coming out right before Christmas. And then Cruella, which is the Disney movie of Cruella de Vil, will be coming out right before Christmas. Those are to be expected. Those are kind of already on the slates, and those are working into tentpole release sections. If you look ahead beyond that, into 2021, you see a lot of things in there. You see a lot of live-action films. You see a lot of Pixar holding the slates. A whole bunch of untitled Marvel movies. So everybody who thought Endgame was over, it's not over. They're going to have those Marvel movies. They're going to add them together. And they've given you a little bit of nod of when something's going to be like a live-action film or when it's going to be animated. The things that are interesting to note is 2021, July 9th, untitled Indiana Jones movie. So they're continuing with the development of the Lucasfilm properties. But on December 17th, 2021, you've got Avatar 2, the long-awaited Avatar 2, which has, I believe, already been delayed I don't know how many times. By the time it comes out, it will be 12 years from the first Avatar. And then, like, 2023, 2024, those, all you got are just the Christmas release dates. And the interesting thing that a lot of people have noticed is you've got Avatar in 2021, Star Wars in 2022, Avatar 3 in 2023, Star Wars in 2024. So it goes back and forth between Star Wars and Avatar out of the Disney big budget slate, all the way looking ahead to 2027 with Avatar 5. I'll be surprised if we actually meet that deadline, the way James Cameron works. I think you've probably got about 50 years before Avatar 5 comes out. Now, what's interesting about this is a lot of people have been bellyaching about, you know, does this make it a monopoly? No, it doesn't. Disney just has its own movies. Just because it has acquired, and it has grown by acquisition, but it acquired the Marvel movies, it acquired the Star Wars movies, it acquired the Pixar movies. But there's still Warner Brothers out there, Universal, Sony, even though there was a little bit of a partnership for the Marvel segment. But you've got plenty of other movie studios out there, and even the big budget ones. You can't get mad at Disney because they figured out how to make Marvel work when DC has had everything under its own umbrella since the 80s and can't get that stuff off the ground. So it's not Disney's fault that it's handling these franchises well. Make better franchises with other things. Now, if they were able to gobble up all the other studios, and if they bought Warner Brothers and Sony and Universal and Lionsgate, then you might want to start to worry. But the big thing people have complained about with it is they're worried about, like, library releases of Die Hard movies, or like, people like to have Die Hard screenings at Christmas. They like to show Alien movies around, you know, horror movie nights and marathons and at special screenings, or in particular Rocky Horror Picture Show, which has lived in continuous release since 1975 because it's never really ever left theatrical release in any way. I don't know what's going to happen with those. I think Disney would be foolish to pull Rocky Horror Picture Show. I think, again, they're going to try and move a lot of the more adult R-rated stuff under the Fox umbrella. And if they're smart, they'll let those live. I don't know if they're interested in reworking Die Hard or Alien or trying to make that into its own franchise again. But, you know, Star Wars and Avatar going back and forth. First of all, I'll be surprised if that actually works. And the other thing is, Avatar 2 is a big up in the air. Who knows? I don't know whether Avatar 2 is going to do well. I presume it's going to do well, but is it going to be a $3 billion movie, which would have to do to top the first Avatar? That's a lot. The reason these movies do well is because they're something you've never seen before. And as we saw what happened with the Independence Day sequel, suddenly they went from something you never saw before in Independence Day in the 90s to something you saw every week, and you've already seen three or four times that year, so that the sequel just kind of flops. We'll see what happens. We've got a lot to go before we get to even 2021, when Avatar 2 is supposed to be coming out. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is not actually a trailer for a movie. It's for a television series. And the reason it's being covered on the show is because it came from a movie. Watchmen, which is an HBO series that will debut somewhere in the fall of 2019. Tick,
tock, tick, tock, tick, tock. We convinced ourselves that they were gone. Tick, but they were just hibernating. Tick, tock, tick, tock, tick, tock. They came for everybody. Oh, please.
Are we safe?
I guess we have ourselves a reckoning.
I've always liked the Watchmen book, and I really like the Watchmen movie. I actually think that the Watchmen movie is one of the better superhero movies, especially of that era. You know, if we're talking pre-Marvel cinematic universe, pre-Dark Knight, Watchmen's probably the best of those modern turn-of-the-century movies. I think it still holds up. I haven't watched it in a while, so I do want to watch it again and see how it holds up. But this one looks like it's going to be a sequel to that, and it's going to be an ongoing series. We'll see. I don't know. I don't know if you can replicate the dense information and character development that you had in the Watchmen graphic novel. We'll see if HBO can do it. I mean, HBO's obviously done some really great stuff before with, like, Game of Thrones, etc. But we'll see. It looks promising. We'll just say that. The next one I want to hit really quickly is It, Chapter 2, which opens on September 6th.
I used to live here.
Won't you come in? It's the least I can do.
My father came to this country with $14 in his pocket.
What did he do, Mrs. Kirsch?
My father joined the circus.
I was always Daddy's little girl. What about you? Are you still his little girl, Beverly? Are you?
The biggest letdown that this has for me is that it doesn't have Amy Adams as the older version of Beverly Marsh. I'm not a huge Jessica Chastain fan, so I was like, ah, when Jessica Chastain got the role, I think Amy Adams would have been better. But still, I'm willing to give this movie a try because I absolutely loved the first one. I thought it was a great representation of what it was as a book. And, you know, I'm just looking forward to seeing Pennywise come back, and I'm looking forward for a really scary, authentic Stephen King movie again. And this one looks like it carries on what they did in the first movie, and hopefully it's better than the grown-up version of It that we had in the second part of the miniseries back in 1990. And that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the new film, The Hustle, and its predecessor, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews with a retro one. And I want to do this one first because, well, there's two reasons. I'll get to the second reason later. But the first reason I want to review this one is it's the movie that inspired one of our releases this week, which is The Hustle. And I'm not going to say Dirty Rotten Scoundrels is the original because it itself is a remake of a 1962 film, Bedtime Story, starring Marlon Brando and David Niven and Shirley Jones. So I've not seen that one. I do kind of want to track that one down, but it kind of fell, I was started to look for it a little bit too late in the production process. So we're not there yet. But I did get a chance to revisit Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. By the way, if you want to revisit Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, it is currently on Amazon Prime, if you've got an Amazon Prime account, or you can just rent it for like $3. Not bad. In Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, Frank Oz directs this 1988 comedy starring Michael Caine and Steve Martin as con men competing for a big score in the French Riviera.
Steve Martin and Michael Caine are competitors in the Riviera's most profitable business, but with very different styles.
Do you have any idea what it feels like to take a woman for $20?
No, I haven't. I'm afraid it's a little out of my class.
Can two con men survive in a town really made for one?
Really?
We find a woman, set a price, and the first man to extract the correct amount from her wins.
Wish me luck.
Let the contest begin.
I remember when this movie came out back in 1988, and I think the last time I have seen this movie since I saw it this week was January of 1999, maybe February. Movie stayed in the theater a little longer back then. But I remember seeing it in the theater. I remember as a 17-year-old kid, I was like, meh, it was okay. I wasn't thrilled by it. Coming back and rewatching it again as an adult kind of has changed my perspective, partly because this isn't a kid's movie. I mean, it's about two guys who are in their 40s or 50s. At this point, I think Steve Martin was in his 40s. Michael Caine was probably in his 50s. And they were basically trying to lure women into giving them money, either just to live their life. That's what Steve Martin's character was doing, just going about his day, trying to get things for free, whereas Michael Caine was a little more refined and had like a system set up. So it's not necessarily something that a kid is going to gravitate towards. I think as an adult, it makes more sense. It's something that makes has some better jokes in it, that there's a little bit of subtlety here. The other thing that's interesting about this movie, for as much as it's lived, a lot of people remember this film. I remember even seeing it, how low-key it was. It is not a wacky screwball comedy. And at the time, in the 80s, Steve Martin was known as the wacky screwball actor. Now he's softened a lot, and he's done more serious work. But gosh, back in the 80s, he was the jerk. You know, he was, you know, the crazy, very physical comedian. You know, it was like putting Robin Williams in a movie back then. When Robin Williams did Dead Poets Society, that was a big stretch for him to not be the goofball that he was. And this was Steve Martin. It wasn't that was Steve Martin was trying to get away from that. It's just that Steve Martin, this wasn't wrapped around that. It still used Steve Martin as the goofball. I mean, there's the famous Ruprecht scene where he's at the table. He's like, may I go to the bathroom first? And then he wets himself in the middle of the dinner. And I mean, this is all stuff that I remember is probably the most famous scene. My aunt, she loved bathroom humor, so that scene was great. But it wasn't like wall-to-wall that uproarious comedy. It was a little bit more subtle. You had Michael Caine playing a much more subtle role than a crazy comedy. I mean, not that Michael Caine's played those subtle roles before, but he provided a really nice foil for Steve Martin's zany antics, because while he does those sometimes, the movie's a little more pragmatic and down-to-earth about, you know, it's about the internal struggle of right versus wrong. It is about these men who are trying to bilk women and, you know, what sort of code they live by. Because there's a certain point where Michael Caine points out, he's like, we're not monsters. We don't go after those that can't help it. We go after the people that can afford it, is kind of how it is approached. And I think that sets up a really interesting look at this system. So there is a certain statement behind this film. It's not just an excuse to have Ruprecht wet his pants during dinner. But overall, it's a funny movie. It also has Glenn Hetty in it. It's nice to see her, and she was younger in this. She's young and beautiful, and she actually works really well as sort of the put-upon possible heiress that they're trying to get $50,000 out of. They basically have this competition between the two of them. So the three of them work really, really well together. And this was back in the day when, in the 80s, they had big scenes, and they could do action scenes, and they could do grand comedic set pieces. But a lot of times the comedy is somewhat more subtle, and it's just found with the two characters or the three characters together playing off one another. And that's really where it works. It's almost a theatrical movie. You know, it's a little more thespian-ish than you would expect. And I think that's part of what's let it live for so long and why they wanted to make a remake of this. So I'm going to have to say, revisiting Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, I have to say it totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about The Hustle. In this remake, Anne Hathaway and Rebel Wilson star as con artists trying to bilk rich men for money.
Impressive. I'm a con artist.
Sisters in arms.
I had no idea how small time I was until I met you.
Penny. Why are women better suited to the con than men? Because no man will ever believe a woman is smarter than he is.
I could be the partner he never knew you needed. Teach me your sugar baby ways.
First lesson, there's nothing more compelling to a man than a vulnerable woman.
I had been planning to see this movie. It was not screened. I think it was screened marginally. This is Annapurna, so they're in their own right. They're a smaller production company. They're not at the level of Fox or Disney or Sony or Warner Brothers. So the fact it wasn't screened widely wasn't a huge alarm for me. And I was actually planning on going to see it before the weekend. Scheduling things happened, and I had some issues going on. But also, I went to go look at the trailer, and the trailer, what's interesting is the first half of the trailer, you're like, oh, I can see where this is a remake of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, because I've just seen that. Okay, and then it kind of goes off the rails, and suddenly, instead of kind of going for the older gentleman, they're going for the internet tech billionaires. And I'm like, oh my God, that's such a... That's the kind of thing, you know, putting in the internet tech billionaire or somebody who was developing apps and throwing that in there is like, you see that all the time in reboots of TV where they're like, well, let's make it relevant. So let's have our tech guy. And we're going to put somebody in skinny jeans and hipster glasses and an infinity scarf. And they're going to tell us about how to get on social media. That's such a cliche now. And it's painful to watch because it's written by people who don't really understand how the industry works. And all of this reminds me of what it was like when I was a kid in the 80s and you had a show and they said, well, we want to make this relevant. So we thought we'd do rap. And you're like, you don't know how to rap? Didn't a real rap artist to do it. You're just sitting there and pretending to rap as somebody who's never rapped in your life. You look ridiculous. I don't rap. There's a reason I don't rap. It's because I don't know how to do it. And I don't think I'm going to be cool by drapping a beat and busting a rhyme or anything like that. So that's what The Hustle feels like. It just feels like it's trying to be as relevant and modernly. Whereas, as I understand it, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels is a very close adaptation to the original bedtime story with the same kind of story, of timeless story of somebody trying to bilk old people out of money, which is kind of what that movie's about. So I didn't get to see The Hustle. It wasn't screened, so I'm going to have to say it's going to get a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
That's it for this segment. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Detective Pikachu and Palms with a special guest. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Because we have a movie that is interesting to younger human beings that are smaller than I am, I thought I'd bring one of them into the studio with me, and that is my son Nicholas. Say hello.
Hello, everybody.
Okay. Let's not try and be too sexy right now. How old are you, Nick?
11, just turned 11.
Just turned 11, and I have just turned 29 again. So... let's talk about the first movie we're going to talk about, which was Detective Pikachu. A teenager goes to a city where humans and Pokemon exist in harmony to investigate the kidnapping of his father with a little help from a Pikachu.
Did you just talk?
Whoa. Did you just understand me?
Oh my God! You can understand me!
Stop!
I've been so lonely!
They try to talk to me all the time. All they hear is Pika Pika.
You can hear him, right?
Pika Pika!
Yeah, Pika Pika Pika. He's adorable.
You're adorable. They can't understand me, kid.
Can no one else hear him?
I don't need a Pokemon, period.
Then what about a world-class detective? Because if you want to find your pops, I'm your best bet.
Why did I bring you in for this review?
Because you would... think I'd be good to talk about a show since I'm a kid.
Because you're a kid. And I was too old to get into the Pokemon phenomenon. But you did. I remember you as a kid, you had the cards, and you had that, what was that thing called, the Pokédex?
Yeah, I still have them.
You have them somewhere. So tell me, as somebody who's played Pokemon and likes Pokemon and gets into it, would you consider yourself a Pokemon expert?
Kind of.
Okay. How did this movie work for you as somebody who's into Pokemon as a kid?
Honestly,
Yes, honestly. No, I don't want you to lie about it. I brought you in here. This is a movie show, not a political show, so you can tell me the truth.
Yeah. Honestly, I think that is very accurate.
It's accurate to the Pokemon characters?
Yeah.
Are you happy that the Pokemon characters looked like the Pokemon characters and they didn't do like a Sonic the Hedgehog thing with them?
Yeah.
Did the story make sense to you? Did you understand where it all went?
Yeah.
You had no trouble acclimating yourself?
No.
Okay. What did you think of the characters? Especially because it was a human character. They didn't have Ash. They didn't have the old standby Pokemon characters. Did you like this new character, the kid who was searching for his dad?
Yeah. I think it'd be too cheesy if that was Ash.
There's a lot to live up to with Ash. And Ash has already had his own animated Pokemon movie.
Yeah.
So you liked the animation of the Pokemon. You thought they looked realistic.
Yeah.
Was there any animated Pokemon that you wish were in there that wasn't in there?
Ooh.
Or did they cover them pretty? I mean, because there's hundreds of these things.
Yeah. Like, a lot.
Do you feel that this had done a good adaptation of it? Do you think that this is true to Pokemon?
Yes.
Okay. The only way I've ever gotten into Pokemon was with Pokemon Go a couple years ago.
Yeah.
We were really into that, and we go around and chase Pokemon with our cell phones.
Yes.
And I have to say, having done that, I at least kind of understand the Pokemon world a little bit better.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand that you go catch them, you put them in these balls, and they're wild out there, and they can evolve and that sort of thing. The one thing they didn't have in this is they didn't have you crunching them down into, what is it, the dust or something like that?
Cells
or credits. You don't have them murdering Pokemon and turning them so you can evolve your Pokemon better. So that's not there. So I felt that was okay. But, I mean, I thought there was some cool stuff having played the Pokemon Go game, and if I got out of it a couple years ago. But I like the fact that they had a Gyarados in there.
Yeah.
And of course, I mean, you had a Pikachu, you had a Snorlax, which is my spirit animal.
Spirit Pokemon.
Do you think that this is something that somebody who doesn't know anything about Pokemon can understand?
Not really.
No, you think that you have to have at least a basic working knowledge. What do you need to know about Pokemon to go see this? This is for the parents out there who have to be dragged there by your kids. What do you need to know? Baseline, just really quick, like two or three big things.
You need to know that you can catch Pokemon and they can be your friends.
Okay.
Yeah, and you can, like, become friends with them.
Yeah. What if somebody said to you, what's a Pokemon? What would you say?
I would say a being that has special powers.
Like a little animal in the wild.
Yeah, an animal in the wild that has special powers.
Do you know what Pokemon stands for?
No.
You don't. And you came on and held yourself up as a Pokemon expert.
I didn't think that Pokemon meant anything.
It means pocket monster.
Oh.
Did you not know that?
No.
Well, you learn something new every day from a novice, from a Pokemon novice. I would say you need to know that they're little creatures that live in the wild.
Yes.
And each one has different abilities. And you can catch them and train them and do things with them as your friend and your partner. And you also have to know that they will evolve, that they can turn into something else sometimes.
Yes.
Like, you know, a Magikarp can turn into a Gyarados.
Or
a Pikachu can turn into a Raichu?
Yeah.
Okay. They don't do Raichus in this one. Pikachu is enough for the parents. Yeah. I think that this is something that is digestible to somebody who doesn't understand Pokemon. But if you're a parent and you're bringing your kids and you don't know anything about this, you may want to have them give you a little crash course beforehand. You might want to have them say, okay, look, this is what they do and this is how it works. And in this respect, they've done so many movies of Pokemon, but they've all been animated. They've all been just cell animated. I think this is really cool because it's CGI, photorealistic Pokemon in a photorealistic setting. The characters are hit and miss. Like the kid, I think Justice Smith is the main character's, the actor's name.
Yeah.
He's good. I think Ryan Reynolds, who does the voice of Pikachu, is funny.
Yes.
Does he get annoying at all?
No.
You know that's the same guy who does Deadpool, don't you?
Oh, it is?
Yeah. They might have the R-rated version of Pokemon come out later. But like there's like a sort of like a love interest, like a girl who she's a reporter. I think she's kind of lame. Her character doesn't do much, but what do you expect? It's a Pokemon.
It's a reporter.
Wow. Hating on the media, man. Jeez. All right, so let's just say, what is your rating of Detective Pikachu? Either rocks, sucks, kind of rocks, kind of sucks.
Knowing that I like Pikachu and detectives a lot, I would give it a totally rock.
It rocks.
Excellent!
And I am going to say it kind of rocks just because, I mean, it's enjoyable, but there are some flaws in it.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's really quickly do the next review. We spent a lot of time on Pikachu, but let's talk about the next movie, which is unlikely something that you would hear Nick talk about, and that is Palms. A group of women in a retirement community start a cheerleading squad.
What's this? You were a cheerleader.
My mother was very sick, so I quit the team.
Maybe you should give it another shot.
We want to start a cheerleading club.
Who will you be cheering for?
Ourselves. Show us what you've got.
I always did want to be a cheerleader. A competition. Mm-hmm. Let's sign up.
We could do with a little help.
We want you to be our choreographer.
The oldest category is 18 plus.
We're 18 plus. 18 plus 50.
Now, Nick, explain to the audience why you saw this movie.
Because if I didn't go with you, I would not eat.
Yes, you had to, in order to eat that night, you had to go see the movie. Yeah. What had happened was my wife and my other two sons, they had an event that they were going to. I had to go see this movie and we were going to get dinner on the way home. And I said to Nick, I'm like, okay, you either come to this movie with me and we'll get dinner on the way home, but I'm not bringing home takeout and I'm not going to come get you and go out again. So you had to go to that. And then we were getting your grandfather settled in his house. And you were, what'd you say to him? You had to go get what? You wanted to go get supplies?
Yeah.
For the movie?
Supplies.
What were the supplies you were going to bring to this movie?
Probably a blanket.
You wanted to bring a blanket.
A stuffed animal.
Yeah.
And a pillow.
Because you thought you were going to fall asleep in it, which made your grandfather laugh quite a bit.
Yeah.
So you tell me really quickly, what did you think of Palms?
Yeah, I think it's really encouraging to those 70-year-olds who want to start a cheerleading
squad. Those older people out there who want to do a cheerleading squad. Its heart's in the right place.
Yeah.
It's uplifting and it's sweet. And you liked the old woman's movie, didn't you? You liked the
so
old woman's
movie. So did you!
I did. I thought it was
so
cute.
Did you!
It's a harmless movie. It's sweet. Diane Keaton's in it. I think she overdoes it a bit, especially at the beginning in her... I'm not into the wacky, slapsticky Diane Keaton, but you get a little bit too much of that at the beginning. But overall, once the story gets going, Jackie Weaver's very funny in it. Rhea Perlman's funny in it. It's got a good cast. And, you know, for sort of like that older generation comedy, whether they're robbing banks or whether they're starting a cheerleading squad, I think it's a cute little movie. So what do you give that one? What do you rate that one?
Kind of rocks.
I'm going to rate Kind of Rocks as well.
Yeah.
It kind of rocks.
And that is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Tolkien, the box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring Scream and Scream Again. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr as we wrap up the show and wrap up the movie reviews on our latest film, Tolkien. The life, schooling, and career of writer J.R.R. Tolkien is examined in this biopic.
Tell me a story in any language you want.
Tolkien!
It's about journeys. The journeys we take to prove ourselves. It's about adventures.
We should form a club, a brotherhood.
We change the world.
through the power of art.
Music, poetry.
And what about Tolkien?
I want to write something.
It's about magic beyond anything anyone has ever felt before.
This is not a Tolkien movie. It is not a Lord of the Rings movie or a Hobbit movie. No matter what the marketing tells you. Here's one of the problems when you make a biopic of somebody who's like a writer or an artist, but particularly a writer. And I've seen this with other things, is people's lives are interesting at times, but they're normal. They're regular lives. Like even like Tolkien, he was in World War One, but of course he survives World War One because he went on to write The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. So, you know, he's going to live. Spoiler alert. And he doesn't really encounter fantasy creatures. This is all stuff that he makes up. And then we saw this with, what was that Christopher Robin movie? Not the Winnie the Pooh one that they did last year. I think it was called Goodbye Christopher Robin. And it was the story of Christopher Robin and A.A. Milne as they developed the Pooh characters in the Hundred Acre Woods and their relationship. It wasn't about Pooh. It wasn't about the Hundred Acre Woods or all the different characters there. They were just sort of like the backdrop. And so you're sort of lured into being like, well, I like Winnie the Pooh. Maybe I'll like this Goodbye Christopher Robin movie. And that really wasn't a movie about Winnie the Pooh. It was about the reality behind the people who created those characters. And this is the way Tolkien plays out. It's not about hobbits and dragons and wizards. It's about a guy who had a single mother. I think his father had died. And he was basically partly raised by the church and he was put in boarding school. And it was him sort of finding his way through there and finding a love of language. How do you make a movie about that? I love language. That's not a very exciting movie to make. And how he went to school and developed his talents and ended up going off to war. And of course, then finding his love of his life and all this kind of thing, which are normal, everyday, dramatic things that can happen. But it's the normal, everyday, dramatic things that can happen. They're not fantastical elements. And so they try to weave in Tolkien-esque things into this movie. Like when he's in trench warfare in World War One, you've got images of knights and battles and dragons and that sort of thing. As him having these sort of fever dreams as he's trying to find a friend out there who he's been looking for in the trenches. But at its core, it's just the development of a writer. And with rare exceptions, you know, somebody like Hunter S. Thompson had an interesting life, and you could do some wacky screwball stuff with his developments on becoming a writer. But Tolkien was a much more pragmatic, down-to-earth person. So As a biopic that's richly shot and well-acted with Nicholas Hoult and Lily Collins and Derek Jacobi, it is still just a biopic. It is still just a movie about a guy going through school and trying to break out as an artist when, you know, sometimes making your own art was not considered the more respectable pathway in life. And so it deals with a lot of that sort of the British stuffiness and unrequited career ideas and things you've wanted to do but never had a chance to. I actually kind of liked the biopic stuff. The stuff that would irritate me was when they were trying to make it look a little bit too much like a Tolkien movie. And I'm like, oh, come on, it's not really. But still, overall, Tolkien, it kind of rocks. I'm going to give it a pass and say it was an interesting movie because I found his school life interesting of how he developed, but again, as a much more pragmatic movie.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk really quickly about the box office. Of course, Avengers won again last weekend. It did not beat the second weekend of The Force Awakens, nor is it probably going to beat the third weekend of The Force Awakens. So it's not going to have every single record in the record books. But it came pretty doggone close. It came like $2 million away from beating Star Wars' second weekend record. This is still a massive movie, and we are still tracking it to see if it's going to end up toppling Avatar. Apparently, James Cameron sent a little note to the folks at Marvel, congratulating them for sinking Titanic as a box office hit. And that's fine. That's nice and all. That sort of goes back to when Steven Spielberg sent a note or he put a advertisement in Variety congratulating Lucas for beating Jaws with Star Wars. So this It's going to probably toppling 700 million by the end of the weekend domestically. It's just all see what happens with that international run. Now this weekend, Detective Pikachu is going to be its strongest competition, but you still have a lot of competition from Avengers. It's going to be a big weekend for the movies this week. But there's plenty of stuff out there and plenty of smaller choices as well. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's release I want to talk about and highlight is actually from April 23rd. So it came out a couple weeks ago. It's from Kino Lobler, and it is the special edition on Blu-ray of Scream and Scream Again. Vincent Price, Christopher Lee, and Peter Cushing star in this 1970 thriller about a superhuman serial killer.
Once you fully understand, your life will have to wind down a very different road.
I want to know.
Yes, you remember the so-called vampire killer.
We've got the man.
Kill him! How could he snap through a high tensile steel?
He didn't,
eh? Look.
This is one of those movies that they started to make a lot of these in the late 60s, especially into the 70s. And even trickling into the 80s, where they would get these famous horror movie actors. You'd get Vincent Price and Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing. Sometimes they'd throw in John Carradine or Peter Lorre. And they would get these classic actors to be in these horror movies. And sometimes it worked out really, really well. I mean, sometimes the movie Horror Express is a great one of that. I think it's in the mid 70s or early 70s. And that one has Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing in it. And they've played in many movies together. But every now and then you get stuff like, oh God, what was it? It was like a Monster Club, which is, I think, from the 80s, which it's a terrible movie. It is really a terrible movie. And you've got like Vincent Price in that one. And I think John Carradine's in it. And he looks like, I think it was filmed like the week before he died because he looks really terrible in it. You know, they have other stuff like The House That Dripped Blood or there's a whole bunch of the Amicus movies. Now, this isn't Amicus. This is done by American International. And so it doesn't have that Amicus charm to it. There's a certain sort of BBC-type charm to the Amicus movies. But this one is still British. But it's done by American International. And, like, Peter Cushing's in it for one scene. He doesn't even interact with the other main characters. And it's very disjointed. I mean, it tells you three separate stories that eventually do coalesce at the end, but at a certain point you're watching it, kind of bounces from one to the other. And it does have that early 70s weight, and you see that with the stock of the film that they use and the set design, and it looks like they're just shooting it on a shoestring. And the things that raise this movie are Vincent Price and Christopher Lee in particular having these roles that eventually come together. Like I said, it's very disjointed. It does not have a linear path, and at times is very confusing. Go watch the trailer on YouTube. I played a part of it there, but go watch the trailer on YouTube, and you'll get a sense the trailer is just as disjointed as the movie is. But it does come together, and about halfway through, it really coalesces in kind of an interesting movie. It starts off as just the sort of, if you ever saw Hitchcock's Frenzy, not his best movie, but it had that feel to it, where it was just this 70s era serial killer and the cops kind of butting their heads against the wall. You know, it feels like, you know, you wanted to go see Psycho, but you ended up seeing Frenzy. And that's kind of how this one plays out. But by about halfway through the movie, you're like, wait, there's something more going on. There's something interesting here. And that's a cool little thing. So Scream and Scream Again is really interesting if you can find it. It's either, sometimes you can find it on streaming. You can sometimes rent it. I think you can get it on Vudu. But you can also buy the new KL Special Edition, which it's out right now. It's got a new commentary track. And plus, it's also got the US and UK versions of the movie, which is interesting because it's back in the 70s, right before the MPAA developed the rating system. And so you do have a certain difference in what you could show and what was considered okay content at the time. I think it gets a PG-13 rating now for a little bit of sex and violence and nudity. But overall, it's a neat movie. It's neat to revisit, especially if you like those old horror movie actors and you want to see what they've got. So I'm going to have to say Scream and Scream Again kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Other releases this week on Blu-ray and DVD include The Lego Movie 2, the second part, What Men Want, The Prodigy, and Better Call Saul Season 4. That's it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about John Wick 3 and A Dog's Journey. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.